Okay, so this is the new book by myself and JOA Rayner Hills, who is over there, Ollie, in private life, Woke Eugenics. And in talking about it, I want you to imagine that you're in a pub and you see some woke young girl. And she has blue hair, obviously, and tattoos, and maybe her left arm is lacerated with a few cuts where she's cut herself because she's sad. And she has a rainbow handbag and all of that stuff. And you go up to her and you say, "Can I buy you a drink?" And she says, "No, I don't accept drinks from racists and eugenicists." And you go, "Please, I really admire what you're doing for us. Please, can I buy you a drink?" And you're like, "No, absolutely not. I will never accept a drink from a racist and a eugenicist and a Nazi." You say, "Oh, that is brilliant. I really believe you. I really believe that you believe what you're saying and that you're actually woke. Of course, we both know that you are a crypto-nationalist and you have been sent by Darwin to bring our people back to genetic health and to sanity. But I really believe you. Please, can I buy you a drink?" And she gets more angry and says, "Look, I'm gonna start filming you with my phone and put it online. And look, the Royal Oak is just down the road. I'll get you a gin and tonic." And it goes on like this because your natural inclination should, of course, be as a person that believes in reason and logic, or as a person, as some of you are, who is a nationalist, who is interested in the good of your nation, that sees yourself as part of a long line from the ancestors that have established, let's face it, the most successful group the world has ever known, which is responsible for all of this that we have around us, by which I, of course, mean the English. And their subsidiaries in Denmark and the Netherlands and America and so on. But you should actually like this person. You should actually appreciate this person. Because this person is the essence of a group level adaptation. In the same way that a genius can be seen to be group selected, often he does not pass on his genes himself, he does not have children, he's some weirdo, you know, but he innovates things which assist his tribe in the battle with other tribes and thus indirectly passes on his genes. Or the soldier lays down his life and thus preserves more of his genetic interests and passes on his genes. Well, this woke woman, I would like to suggest to you, is doing exactly that. She is group selected. She is sacrificing her personal genetic interests in order to ensure that white people, European people, whatever, will become genetically healthy once again. You will become mentally stable, will become religious, will become conservative, will become all of the things, will become intelligent, will become all of the things that we were under harsh Darwinian selection for until the Industrial Revolution. She is bringing down the modern world. She is bringing down this all the reason why we have to meet in Budapest rather than London in order to ensure that everything will be okay in the end. And this means that when the next comet hits us and wipes out civilization, we won't be in a situation in which only the Yanomamo survive or only the people on the Andaman Islands survive or whatever, and that everyone on the grid dies and that we're also deracinated and genetically unhealthy, we all die out. Instead, we will survive. Because what wokeness does is basically take everybody except those who are highly genetically, mentally and physically healthy, which we know correlates as well with being weak, with being religious, with being conservative, and these things are significantly heritable. It takes those people and in various ways it induces them not to have children, not to pass on their genes, to cancel themselves from the gene pool, such that among the more intelligent, the big predictor of fertility is that you are right-wing, conservative, religious, and the big predictor of sterility is that you are left-wing and that you are an atheist. So those people are out, and that's among the more intelligent, and among the less intelligent, what that strong it predicts doing is miscegenating, is moving out of the European group and becoming part of the general morass of immigrants and so forth. And so wokeness is pushing for this, and thus it's pushing for a future in which European man, as I said, is like the pre-industrial norm. Is intelligent, is a conservative, religious, and genetically healthy, is high in that fitness factor, which means that when civilization is brought down, Europeans will be able to successfully fight against their competitors, and when the next comet hits in or the next volcano erupts that brought down the Bronze Age or the next volcano erupts that brought down the Iron Age or whatever, then we are physically fit. Now, how is this the case? Well, if we look at the essence of wokeness, I think it can be useful to reduce it down to Jonathan Haidt's, I mean, it's a simplification, but Jonathan Haidt's five moral foundations. That is that we are a pack animal, therefore we must be both group-oriented and we must ascend the hierarchy of the pack in order to get more access to females or access to high-status males and thus pass on our genes. So we have the group-oriented foundations of sanctity versus disgust, of obedience to authority, and of in-group loyalty. And we have the individually oriented foundations of equality, which ensures that you get more of the pie, even if you're low down in the group, and of harm avoidance, which means that you don't get harmed, even if you are low down in the group. Now, under the conditions of harsh selection that we were subject to until about 1800, as I said, we know because these things all intercorrelate, they're all pleiotropically related, we were selecting for conservatism, that is to say, being about equal in all five moral foundations, where leftists are simply high in the individually oriented foundations, in a conservative equality and harm avoidance. We were stating for religiosity. We know this is significantly heritable and so on. We have this fitness factor. Now, what you see with the Industrial Revolution is the collapse of harsh Darwinian selection pressure. Harsh Darwinian selection pressure goes, child mortality goes from about 50% or 40%, something like that, in 1800 down to 1% today. And we can see this. I mean, I was born in 1980, and within my own lifetime, it was not uncommon for my great-grandparents' generation, she was born in 1902, to have lost a sibling as a child. This was common. And now to lose a child, and it's tragic to lose a child, obviously it's awful, nothing could be worse, but it's considerably less common. It's so uncommon. And this is because of this collapse in selection pressure. Now, what that was therefore being selected out under these harsh Darwinian conditions was mutation, which is almost always bad. A mutation of the body, having a bad immune system, whatever, is related to mutation of the mind. And so you have this fitness factor, and it collapsed. We have then a massive buildup of mutation. Now, what you would expect would be those who were the big carriers of mutation, the deviants would be generally in the direction away from what we were selecting for. So away from conservatism, away from religiosity, away from being ethnocentric. Now, it's true that you're going to get some mutation that will push people to be very right-wing. For example, at the moment, psychopathology is correlated with being very, very far-right because they like taking risks and they like offending people, and so they're far-right, like some people in this room, perhaps. Otherwise, in general, you would expect it to be in the direction of leftism, and indeed it is. And there are so many markers of this. People who are left-wing, their faces are less symmetrical, they're more likely to be left-handed, they're shorter, they're more likely to be ill, they're more likely to be mentally ill. That's a huge thing. They're very significantly likely to be mentally ill. They're more likely to be sexual deviants, whatever. So the direction is leftism. Now, what you would expect is that this would build up and up and up in the population, until a sort of tipping point was reached. And experiments indicate that when about 20% of a group believe a different thing, when about 20% of the group start dissenting, then they are seen as the up-and-coming young Turks. And very quickly, the society shifts over to them. And I suspect, and what me and Ollie argue in the book, is that what happened was that we were this group-oriented society, and the tipping point, at least in England, was probably about 1963. Sex came rather late for me in 1963, somewhere between the end of the Chatterley ban and the Beatles' first LP. So, of course, in America at that time, you had the assassination of Kennedy, you had civil rights, all this kind of stuff. So you have this shift as towards individually oriented values and away from group oriented values, a concern with equality, concern with harm avoidance, basically concern with feminine, female type values. Now, once that shift happens, then intelligent people, intelligence is associated with norm, with basically social conformity, with norm mapping, with looking around the world and noticing what the dominant set of values is and forcing yourself via effortful control to imbibe those values, believe those values, and then competitively signal those values. And so then what you get is a kind of runaway individualism until you get to a point with wokeism where you can't even say a man's a man, where a woman has a penis, where all to avoid hurting the feelings of some narcissist, and you must share in their delusion that they, them, are a woman when they're not. They're a man with a sexual fetish. And so we have this runaway individualism. Now, what this then turns into is a kind of selection event, because the culture itself is changed. And whereas even when I was at school, children are pushed down an adaptive roadmap of life where they are told boys are boys and girls are girls, where they are told you should marry and you should have children, where they are told you should fight for your country and be patriotic, where they are pushed down an adaptive roadmap of life. Now they are pushed down a maladaptive roadmap of life, where they are told it's okay to be gay, where they are told it's okay to be trans, where they are told they should be guilty because they're white, where they are told they should be guilty because they're men, where they're told they should be guilty because they're human, and thus engage in climate strike and not have children, where they are told, essentially, that they should resign from the gene pool. Now, in that context, the only kind of people that would be resistant to being placed on this maladaptive roadmap of life would be people that were genetically highly religious, highly conservative, and so on. And those traits correlate, as I said, with mental and physical health. So in other words, the only people that would be resistant to wokeness would be people that were high in a kind of general fitness factor. Whereas if we think about the kind of thing that modern society and wokeness in particular throws at us, the list is endless. This is the self-loathing, the anti-patriarchy, such that women are encouraged to spend their most fertile years at university being inculcated with nonsense rather than having children, where women are encouraged to spend all of their 20s and increasingly the first half of their 30s concentrating on a career rather than having children. And again, it would be the more, as it were, genetically based women who would be resistant to that. I mean, this is a context in which if you could have an abortion, you're encouraged to have an abortion. It's good to have an abortion. Well, who has abortions? It's women who have low IQ and it's women with psychopathic traits, i.e. the kind of people we want out of the gene pool. Now we have in the Netherlands and in Canada, euthanasia. And we're seeing young people. There was a case in the Netherlands recently of a girl of about 26 who she's not really passing on her genes. She had borderline personality disorder and she decided to be put to death. And from a eugenic perspective, surely that is a good thing, because it means that we are removing the genetically unhealthy from the gene pool. The same is true of materialism. So we have a situation which the current system is bringing about where young people can't afford a house in London, or they can't afford the kind of house they want. And so they have to make a choice between a material comfort and having children. And it's people that are religious and conservative that are going to be inclined to sacrifice material comfort for the biological imperative of having children. Increasingly, young people, they can't move out, so they're forced to live at home. Are they going to get girlfriends that way? No. So they're out of the gene pool. Again, material comfort over having children. We even have things like fat acceptance. The idea that it's okay to be fat. It's okay to be unhealthy. What are you doing? You're promoting poor health. You're saying to people, it's good to be unhealthy. And so, of course, those people die young. Those people fail to be healthy. Those people are more likely to fail to pass on their genes. Wokeness itself also operates at a cultural level to help to bring this about by basically making white people feel crap, by making them feel that they are invaded, which to some extent they literally are, by not reflecting their life back to them on TV. No, instead what's reflected back is mixed race couples or foreign couples or whatever. Everything to kind of demoralize them, to make them feel unhappy, to make them feel dysphoria. And again, the kind of people that would survive that, the kind of people that would not be sucked in to the woke cult, would be those that were genetically resistant to it, because everything in the environment is bad and is trying to get them to not have children or trying to get them to remove themselves in some way from the gene pool. And so therefore you have a selection event for who is going to be resistant to that. And also, I mean, if we think about the situation we're in, even 10 years ago, we could meet at the Oxford and Cambridge and it was pretty much okay. And the screw is tightened more and more such that if you are conservative, the differences among conservatives, I suggest, begin to matter less. And you are forced to come together and therefore breed with other people that are conservative or religious like you in a way that wouldn't have been the case in the past. Creating children that are more likely to carry these traits in a way that in the past, I mean, when I was at university, I had a really good friend who was active in the Labour Party. She lived next door to me. You know, it was great. She was in the Labour Party. I was in the Conservative Party. Not a problem. It would be a problem now, to the extent that at the university I was at, and there's someone who was much younger than me that was at that university here today, they had to have secret societies. So it's secret to discuss based stuff like this. Were unthinkable when I was at university, but to be fair, we weren't polarised yet, so we hadn't gone down the rabbit hole, so we didn't even think about these things. We were too busy drinking. But there you are. So it creates this resentful white subgroup. The lower class will tend to miscegenate out anyway, and so what you are left with is a healthy people who can survive the new group selection, who can build a kind of neo-Byzantium where perhaps civilization holds out before it's too late. And also I should note that the woke collapses civilization. That's the other thing they're doing. In encouraging intelligent women to resign from the gene pool, they're helping to bring down civilization, to bring down the very conditions that genetically sick people like them are reliant on to survive, to bring down health service, to bring down functioning law, to basically create South Africa. That is what they are doing, and this is a selection event, the remnant survivors of which, therefore, are this healthy group who can carry on. So next time you are in a pub and you see this woke girl with you, let's imagine you manage to get her to the pub. You get the girl to the pub, and you say, what do you want? And she, you know, gin and tonic? And she's like, yeah, okay. And do you want some pork scratching? No, don't eat meat. Of course you don't. Of course you don't eat meat. Well, you know, cheers, and you drink with her, and then she says, look, I better be going now. And you say, please don't go, at least not yet. We need you. Right, thank you very much. Can I ask if my co-author has anything to add? If so, come here.
Yeah, that was a pretty good summary of the book. I just would emphasize, three points to emphasize. First one is that the woke polarizes society. It actually destroys the center and creates a kind of religious fundamentalist consciousness. Many of you will probably not consider yourself religious, I'm sure, conservatives or atheists, but you have the experience of belonging to now, these days, a group. You know, there's normies over there and then there's you and the in-group. This is the kind of consciousness that's fundamentalists who isolate from the mainstream, you know, have their the parallel society is built on this principle. So that, like a sort of dialectic, by rejecting far-right's principle so perfectly, the woke are kind of creating the far-right. They're mirroring it, they're insulating it. It's a kind of Noah's Ark that will survive the breakdown of civilization. What the second point, which is the Ted Kaczynski dimension, we have a whole chapter in the book devoted to Ted Kaczynski. You got to understand that the woke are accelerationists, but they're not the kind of accelerationists that are optimistic. They want to get to a kind of futurist utopia. They want to, the premise of the book is that the woke are just hate the modern world. Not consciously, they don't intellectualize this so much, but they just cannot put up with anything. They're just so neurotic, they just want to destroy everything, and they want to create a society that's economically untenable, as well as make the military so perfectly weak that either we ever get invaded, or there's some sort of revolution. But democracy in the long run becomes unsustainable, untenable, all of this sort of thing. And the third thing is, because this idea is kind of a meme, as much as a theory, the idea that the left are really on our side, we sort of want to join in and become accelerationists ourselves, which is why I had these signs printed. This sort of idea came to me later. So it says, Allah is gay, Allah is bi, Allah is trans, Allah is all of us, right? And then another one, this one says, Allah loves LGBTQ. And this is perfect, because this is like queers for, queers for Palestine, this is like travesty for queers, right? This is like building, we're taking what the left always doing to push things further and further, and we're going to like innovate even more. Like, why? Let's stop this Jewish conspiracy that the Muslims hate LGBTQ. That's the problem. That's false. That's wrong. Of course, they love, Allah loves it. It's in the Hadith, I'm sure. I'm looking there. And so, yeah. We need to join in and become more woke than woke, you know, accelerate the process. The final point of this book is to kind of promote a new form of accelerationism for the far right, which is partially, paradoxically kind of embracing what the woke are doing. It's a sort of frenemy. So, yes, that's That's what I would see.